do make yourselves comfortable. Every now and again, I feel this awful urge to embarrass people, and I so shouldn't do it. Rob Wilson, this morning, this is your turn. This is the best quote I've heard in so many years. This morning was kind of crisis mode on the sound desk. We've had some mornings when we've struggled to get this thing to work, and this morning it went about as close to the wire as it could have possibly gone. It's not helped by the fact that the big projector blew up during the week, and we've had to lash something together this morning. And then the computer didn't want to work, and Rob says, "I love it when it's so last minute. It's so James Bond." I mean, how cool is that? You know, you don't need to go to the cinema. You don't need to go to Skyfall. Just come along to St. Matt's. And if it's not exciting enough sitting there in church, Rob will give you a job with the AV system, and that will make your life even more exciting. I'm sorry, if I did embarrass you, I apologise. But that was about as good as quotes get, and I just couldn't quite resist. The moral to the story is you just should never, ever say anything to me because I cannot be trusted with it. That's what it comes down to. It is as simple as that. Okay, this morning we're talking about vision. This is a little delayed. We set a Sunday aside last month to focus on vision, and we had cleared all three services so we could take time to do this. And then the vicar got ill, and so it didn't happen. And so I'm sorry about the delay. Just a very big thank you to everyone that stepped in and rescued me on that Sunday. Bob in the morning, Matt at 5, and John in the evening, and covered everything that I should have done. And so we've just kind of looked for the earliest opportunity to clear the diary and take time in each service to talk about this again. And that's today. And we're doing that because we just believe when we talk about vision, we will want everyone to be on the same page. We want to be able to share what we're thinking as a leadership. We want people to kind of hear it in church. And we would hopefully want everyone kind of to be with us in this. 7 years ago, is the side aisle ones working? Okay, it's just the ones here that aren't working. Okay. I can't see what's happening in front of me, but don't worry about it. I'll have to look behind me. 7 years ago, we introduced a vision statement that's kind of become part of the fabric of St. Matthew's. If we could just have that next slide up, encountering and responding to God today. And kind of one of the hardest things about today is to say it feels like it's time to move on and to refocus on what we believe God is calling us to. And I have to say, I find that particularly difficult because I was the architect of that vision statement, and it kind of represents so much of what is important to me and actually what I still believe is important for us as a church. But it feels like there's more that we would want to say, and we would want to be clearer about the things that are important to us. So during the course of last year, we took the leadership team and the DCC, our church council, away for a day to Burswood, and we spent some time thinking, well, what are our priorities as a church? What really matters to us? Does the vision as we have it, encountering and responding to God today, does that kind of still sum up what we want to be about as a church family? Or is it time to move on? That we felt there were some things about it that were really important and really strong. And to be honest, we would never, ever want to let go of. The heart of it is that we want God's presence to be the thing that dictates what we do and what we're about as a church. You know, we long to meet with him, we want to hear his voice, and we want everything we do as a church to flow out of that. And we might be changing the vision statement, but that isn't something that ceases to be part of our heart and part of our desire. And that was one of its great strengths, we felt. And if you've been around St. Matthew's, you would know that kind of that sits in the middle of a pie chart. And there are a whole lot of other things that are actually quite important things for us that describe what it means to encounter God, to worship Him, to experience Him through His Holy Spirit, to hear Him speak to us through His Word, you know, to encounter Him in prayer, to respond through discipleship, through being a community, through mission, and it kind of goes on in this kind of pie chart in a way. And actually, no one is saying that the things that are on that are no longer important to us. In a way, I guess the best way to describe them would be to say that actually they are our values as a church. These are things that matter deeply to us. And despite, you know, all I'm saying, which would make you think, well, why are we changing it if it's that good? We still felt that there were some weaknesses. Whilst that vision statement in itself was clear, we felt that actually there was so much in the map that actually some of the things that were really important to us got lost. But I guess the biggest weakness we felt was actually we felt that we needed to put Jesus much more in the heart of what we're about and in the centre of everything we're doing. And we felt that what we did needed to flow out of who He was and what He says to us. And it just didn't feel that the vision map reflected that. And part of the problem about it being a bit complicated was actually there were some things that ought to really be kind of top of the list when it comes to our priorities as a church that somehow got lost in the mix. And I guess perhaps the biggest of those was discipleship. And so we wanted to come up with something that actually put the focus much more on what it means for us to be disciples of Jesus and us to be people who share in the family business, Jesus's priorities of making disciples of others. And we wanted to put that in the heart of everything that we're about. Can we just jump to the next slide, Rob? Thanks. You know, actually, it's a really bad idea to insult the person that's doing the AV when you require them to kind of save your talk for you by giving you the right thing at the right time. He's so nice as well. Thank you, Rob. Mary read Matthew 28, verses 16 to 20, and you may be getting a bit tired of this passage because it was kind of one of the passages that we began our teaching on discipleship on last term. It's a passage that's been on my heart probably just increasingly over the last year. And it seems to me it speaks more than anything else into what we want to be about as a church. We use it to introduce the teaching on discipleship because it's fundamental to our understanding of discipleship. But there are just two things that I particularly want to focus on from it today as I introduce kind of our new vision to us this morning. The first one is the significance of Jesus and why we want to place Jesus in the heart of everything that we are about. And the second is that if we're going to place Jesus as the center of what we do, then actually what matters to Jesus needs to matter to us. What His priorities are need to be our priorities. You know, it's no good saying, well, we're excited about Jesus, but actually not be excited about what actually excites Jesus. And that's at the heart of this. So just to kind of pick up some things on the passage and then to lead into what we believe God is calling us to as a church. First of all, Jesus. It seems to me that in this passage, we see a paradigm shift going on in the lives of the disciples. It's like the scales have fallen away from their eyes, and they see what has been before them all the time, but they see it in a new light, and at last, they understand the true meaning of what they're seeing, or should I say the person that they're seeing. You know, these people have spent at least 3 years with Jesus. They've travelled with Him. They've shared His life with Him. They've heard Him teach. And he's kind of taken the stuff that he shared with the crowds and explained it in much greater detail to them. Not only have they heard his teaching, they've seen the things that he has done. And throughout that, there's been this teasing out of them trying to make sense of who he is. And it particularly comes to a head in Matthew 16 when Jesus asked them the question, who do the crowds say I am? They say, well, some say you're a prophet. Some say you're John the Baptist, come back to life. Some say you're Elijah, kind of come back. And then he says to them, well, who do you say I am? And there's this incredible point when Peter comes this confession that he believes that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And, there's a moment of revelation there. But it feels to me like they only really get it after Jesus has died and been risen from the dead, and in this window we kind of get just a picture of how their view of Jesus has changed, because they come to this person that they've spent 3 years with, and they worship. They worship. They're not seeing a man anymore, but they're seeing God who has taken human form and lived with them. And suddenly the scales are gone and the understanding is there, and there is only one response, and that's to fall on their knees and to worship him. And actually, just before I kind of move on, actually one of the things that's marked out us as a church is worship. And Susie, just thank you for this morning. It's been fun to worship. Well, hasn't it? And you know, that's good. And you know, that's it's one of the values that's enduring. It doesn't go away because we might be changing our vision. That's key to the fabric of, you know, who we are. But they worship because they recognize who he is. And if they're left in any doubt, kind of Jesus shatters that. And just to say as well, there's a bit of a reality check in there, isn't there? Because actually there's some honesty in this. And I think that's an important thing for us as a church. It says they worshipped, but some doubted. And actually, I think, you know, not only does the worship have significance for who we are as a church, but I also think that little phrase, but some doubted, does too. Because it speaks to me of reality, of a lack of pretense, of not being afraid to say, I don't get it, I'm confused, I can't really believe it. And actually, we would want to be a church that has room for that, that actually you don't have to have it all sewn up to be part of this family. But actually, it's not to make a virtue of doubt necessarily, but it is to make a virtue of honesty and of reality, and of having the freedom to perhaps believe or see things differently and not to be forced into a mould. And that's a bit of an aside. There's this honesty moment. And then Jesus makes this incredible claim. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. And there are the reasons for wanting to change our vision statement is to put Jesus in the centre of it, because it seems to me that Jesus' claims are completely all-encompassing. They cannot be avoided. One of the comments that was made about the previous vision statement was, actually, could a Muslim say what we were saying? We want to encounter and respond to God. And actually, what marks out us as different is Jesus. And we can't avoid that. That's the centre of what our faith is about. It's based on his life and his death and the relationship we have with God through him. And we're here because we believe he is the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through him. And we believe that his claims cannot be avoided. So he has to be at the heart of everything we do. And we want to, in a sense, ensure that anything we do in church kind of flows out of that. I think one of the biggest criticisms, well, I think one of the most revealing things that is, can ever be said about church is summed up in some comments made by Alan Hirsch, where he says, you know, there is something very wrong when we live in a world where actually people on the whole are fascinated by Jesus, but haven't got much time for church. And there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect. People find Jesus attractive, but we frequently are a turnoff to people. Not necessarily us, but church is frequently a turnoff to people. And actually, why would that be the case? Well, actually, I think we need to be more like Jesus, because people aren't turned off by him. They're excited by him, even if at times they're affronted by his claims. And they are affront to anyone that wants to have authority over their own lives, because he's saying, actually, I claim all authority. And so we wanted to put Jesus at the heart of what we're about. And that's why the new vision statement is sitting there in the middle of this, igniting passion for Jesus. We want what we do to be about him. And there's continuity in that. When we talk about the presence of God, what are we really saying? We're saying, actually, we want to meet with Jesus, don't we? That's what we're saying. To put it in a theological context in how we believe, you know, we know that he lived physically on this planet. We know he ascended to heaven. But we also know his promise was to send the Holy Spirit, that he is here with us now by his Spirit. That's what we long for. It's the presence of Jesus that the Holy Spirit brings to us, that reality. So that hasn't changed, that longing for God's presence. But it's being crystal clear about the one we want our focus to be on. We kind of believe that's vital. And I guess what we're saying is we don't want to be passive. We want to be passionate. We want to be a people who are passionate about Jesus. And if we're passionate about Jesus, we also need to be passionate about his priorities. And that's why we've talked about igniting passion in Jesus. That actually we're called to play a part in this. It's not just something that we kind of believe. It's something that requires a response of us. And so we have kind of this paradigm shift in this passage where they see Jesus for who he is. And we're saying, well, we want that to be the reality for us, don't we? We want to grasp more and more who he is. We want to, and we're never going to get it all. There's always going to be more to see and to understand and to know about Jesus. And we're never going to love him enough. There's always going to be a need, in a sense, to be more passionate and to grow in that. But he's saying, you know, they have this paradigm shift. They see that. And then he says to them, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. And this is why we've been talking about discipleship for the last term, because it just seems like it's absolutely fundamental to what Jesus was about. You know, his ministry was about calling people to discipleship, to share their lives with him. And the commission that he leaves with his disciples is a commission to do that. And that's Jesus's priority. And we believe that that needs to be our priority. It's about making disciples. It's about being disciples and making disciples, because that's what he calls us to. In fact, actually, that's what he commands us to do. So what does that mean? Let's just jump on a slide. Thanks. Is that okay? When we talked about discipleship, we kind of identified three areas. We identified that part of discipleship is about our own personal relationship with God. Another aspect of it is that we are not called to do this on our own. That actually, we're called to do it in relationship with each other, and we need each other to help us grow as disciples. And actually, it's not just something about what happens in here on a Sunday. This has much more to do with the world in which we live and the things we do kind of throughout the week, the time we spend with our families, the time we spend in our workplaces or at college or at school or in kind of the things that we do for fun. You know, it's about Jesus being the center of our world as well. And actually, when we talk about igniting passion for Jesus, actually, I think it relates to all of these areas. It relates to, you know, becoming more like Jesus in our relationship with God. It becomes about becoming more passionate about him and about growing our devotional life. But it also, it means about sharing in relationship with others, about you provoking me to follow Jesus more closely and me provoking you to the same. It's about giving us permission to help each other in becoming more like Jesus and living out this calling of being disciples and of making disciples. It means us taking seriously to think through what it really means to be a disciple of Jesus in the City of London or in a business in Tunbridge Wells or at the school gate, which can be an incredibly challenging place to be. You know, what does it look like to express, to be Jesus to the people that we meet there? How can we do that? And we want to see, you know, in a sense, this touch each of these levels. We want to be becoming more effective in each of these areas. We want to ignite passion about our own walk with Jesus, about our relationships with others, about how we follow Jesus in the world around us. Some honesty here. I don't know that we know fully what this looks like. You know, to jump back to the old vision statement, encountering and responding to God, there was this little word where it finished up with today, you know, and part of that was because we were saying that we wanted to do church in a way that was relevant today. And the problem with preaching on a passage like Matthew 28 is probably many of you have heard people preach on it before. The problem with talking about something like discipleship is that probably many of you will have heard people talk about discipleship before or read books on discipleship. And you know, well, the best book to read on discipleship is this book. But actually the challenge is actually how we do this in the culture in which we live today. How we do this in a way that actually is relevant to us as a church. How we do it without actually being legalistic or placing burdens on people that actually, you know, wear them down rather than build them up. And just as a leadership team, when we sat down and started to look at the vision statement and started to ask honest questions, was it saying everything we wanted to say about St. Matthew's? Was it summing up what we, you know, what we wanted to be as a church? Did we have to look for something more? Actually, we've, you know, when we started to look at discipleship specifically, actually, we, at times it feels like we've almost got as many questions as we have answers. But I'm not going to give you detail, but I just want to put some practical stuff on it. What does it actually look like? What might this make? How might this want to work for us? Can we just jump on one? Thanks. I guess one of the things that kind of came out when we were talking about this last term was that actually a disciple is a bit like an apprentice. You know, you're learning to do the stuff that the person that's disciple you does and to be more like that person. And so I guess what we're aware of, you know, actually, if we're going to be apprentices, we actually need tools for the job. And actually, one of the things we're really serious about doing as a church is actually developing a toolbox, developing different tools that will help us grow in our discipleship, whether it's in our devotional life or in our relationships together or in how we live in God's world. And just as we're all different and we all find ourselves called to different things, we just recognise there needs to be real diversity in that, because what will be useful for one person won't be helpful for another, and they will need to. So what we're looking to do is to develop things that people can take and use You know, just a classic example is the whole devotional thing. I've loved the fact that we've heard from Alice more recently talking about, you know, how she's been exploring spirituality, which has kind of really got some really ancient roots. And, you know, there'll be some people that that will just resonate with, and that will be a tool that they will feel, yeah, I want to pick up on that and use that sort of spirituality and that sort of learning that's been handed on down through the ages. That would really help me grow closer to Jesus and, to, you know, for my passion for him to grow. And that would be a tool for some. But someone would go, flipping out, I just don't get that whole monastic thing. You know, give me an app on my iPad. I haven't got much time. I'm on the train in the morning. If there's an app there and I can press it and it will help me read the Bible and hear from Jesus, that's the tool I need. So what we're saying is we want to create stuff that connects with how God's made us. And we want to embrace the fact that actually he's made us all a bit different. That's why we're all a bit odd, not just the vicar. Sorry, that was probably pointed at you all. So there's that sense of a toolbox to help us grow, and we want to create tools that will help in all of those areas. Jump on one more slide, and I'm going to shut up after this one. There's some keys to the sorts of things that we want to try and develop, and I guess these summarise them actually. We want them to be high on grace and low on law. And if you're having a negative reaction to me saying, oh, we want to put the emphasis on being disciples and making disciples, there's a very good chance that actually that happens because you've been in a place in church life where for you, that's been put on you as something that's legalistic and a duty and something that you have to do. And actually, I don't believe it's meant to be like that. It's meant to be something that we want to do. And it's meant to be something that's empowered by the Spirit of God living within us. So it's high on grace, but it's low on duty and pressure and legalism. And I think we see that in that reading. You know, what Jesus asks of them is as big as it gets. You know, go and make disciples of all nations and teach them to obey everything I've commanded you. Actually, you couldn't ask any more of them than that. But then he says, and I will be with you to the end of the age. He asked them to do something that is incredibly challenging. And I think what God is asking of us, if we're going to be serious about being Jesus' disciples today and making disciples, that's challenging. But there's promise that actually his grace is enough. And if he asks something of us that's challenging, he will give us the grace and the empowering to fulfill it. So we want it to be high on grace and low on law. I had to go and change this slide halfway through the service because actually it wasn't saying what I meant it to be. It is costly to be a disciple. At times Jesus talks about the cost being as if to take up one's own cross to follow him. Doesn't get more costly than that. It's about saying we're going to die to what we want to follow him. And you need to hear what I'm saying. What we want to do is come up with models for discipleship that actually require minimum effort but provide maximum gain. That's not to say that it's not costly. To be like Jesus is painful and challenging at times, and to become more like him, all the more so. Yeah, it chips away at our flesh and our own desires and says, it's not about you, it's about him. And actually, most of us like it being about us. I do. I'm about as self-centered as it gets, you know. It is costly. But one of the things we're aware of is, and that's what we mean by this phrase, is that actually most of our lives are incredibly busy, incredibly pressurized, and actually, if we want to take us to being disciples and making disciples seriously, what it shouldn't be about doing is wearing us out even faster because we're adding more to our lives. It's about finding ways to do it that bring about the greatest amount of change in our lives, but with the least amount of pressure being added. And we're really serious about that. And also, the other side of this is that it needs to be both intentional and flexible. Have you noticed I'm looking very slim? A yes would really help. It would so help, you know? Oh, dear me. Gutted. I've lost 3/4 of a stone since Christmas. I'm very proud. Mike, I have an app on my iPad. It's a personal joke, sorry. And I put in what I've eaten, and it tells me how many calories. And it tells me how many calories that I shouldn't have in a day and how many I shouldn't. Anita, you completely blew it for me last night, but never mind. But believe it or not, when you choose to do it, it makes a difference. I have thought about losing weight, well, actually, my daughter's thought about me losing weight, for a lot of years. And you know what happens? Every year, I end the year heavier than I began it. This is not a good cycle to be in. It kind of got to the point when I realised that 12.5 stone, I either had to get taller, and that wasn't going to happen, or I actually had to do something about it. I had to be intentional. And actually, amazingly, when you are intentional, when you eat less and do more exercise, actually, you lose weight. It's quite remarkable. Actually, if we want to be more like Jesus, it won't happen by accident. There is a need for us to be intentional about it, to choose it as individuals and to choose it as our priority as a church. It won't happen by accident. And that's why, you know, in a way, it's why we're rocking the boat. So, you know, do we need to reprint everything? Do we need to try and explain what we're about in a different way? Actually, yes, because we really want to take this serious. We want to be intentional about it. And what I'm saying to you is that actually we want you to be intentional about it. We want you to take serious, actually, the call to ignite passion in Jesus, to actually seek to stir up your own life with him that you might be more passionate about, to stir up those around you, to be those that actually help people that have not discovered yet Jesus yet in this world, actually discover him and become passionate about him too. It needs to be intentional and it needs to be flexible. And this comes back to this whole kind of bit that actually we're different. One size doesn't fit all. You know, we need to find ways that do it that actually will be right for each of us and to recognise that we're all different. There's a final slide and it just sums it up really. Thanks, Rob. You know, why igniting passion for Jesus? Because we want everything we do to be centred on him. And because we want his priorities to be our priorities. As a church, we want to be involved in fulfilling his command. And we want to acknowledge that we need the power of his precious Holy Spirit living within us to do that. Two tweets that a friend of mine tweeted just by accident this week. I'm sure they weren't by accident. I'm sure he planned it. He tweeted the first one, if we fail to reproduce ourselves and pass on the torch of life onto the next generation, if we don't make disciples, Christianity will end in just one generation. Sobering thought, isn't it? If we don't play our part, that's it. Can't rely on others. And then the second tweet was, yet because of the power of multiplication, we are also just one generation away from the worldwide fulfillment of God's great commission. That actually we're one generation. There was a third tweet. The third tweet was, the choice is yours. And I guess that's what I would say. The choice is ours. I'm going to shut up and hand back to my wife.